Vic DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower overlooking Michigan Avenue. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. And you can send your text to 24720. Every Friday night at midnight, we review the movies. We also tell you what you can get on demand as well. There's a lot of options now on how you can watch movies, movies that aren't even in the theater yet. Movies that come out the same day in the theaters are now available as on demand. And so we give you a rundown on all the movies that are on demand and ones that are in the theater. And we invite you to call in at 312-981-7200. So let's make it official. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews. Midnight Movie Reviews right here on WGN, and celebrating our 15th anniversary of having a radio show. May 31st, when we started, was the official date of 15 years of having a radio show on this station, and I'm really thrilled about it. But I've been reviewing movies and a part of WGN this week for 28 years, so it's a pretty crazy week of anniversaries, and we're thrilled to be on the air right now. Midnight Movie Review started a few years ago. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every Friday night. We cover all the movies, and let's welcome these guys to the show. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
All righty, then. So let's begin with the on-demand stuff, shall we, which we always do.
Sure.
And here's the deal. I've got the Comcast.
Yeah.
Okay. How many different on-demands are there?
Well, there's Comcast, there's Amazon Prime on Amazon.com, there's iTunes, and then, you know, other cable companies. I don't know so much throughout Chicago, but throughout the country, there are other cable companies that have some other titles as well.
The on-demand option, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the general one, there are probably more options on Amazon Prime, a few things, but sometimes they bring in on-demand stuff from like years ago sometimes too, and make it seem new. Comcast is sort of the general one. Is you can check every Friday, sometimes even as early as Thursday, to find the new on-demand stuff every week.
Okay, yeah, actually Comcast has a really good on-demand feature as well.
They certainly do,
where they update everything for you too, so you can see all trailers for all the new movies that'll be coming out and things like that. So. All right, well, that's what I have for the Comcast On Demand. That's what I use to watch these movies. And so we've got some new, brand-new movies to talk about available On Demand. And tell me a little bit about Crazy Kind of Love.
Well, Crazy Kind of Love, you're not going to get a whole lot from the description, which is a broken family finds their relationships to one another changed by a new arrival in the household. Mm-hmm. Nothing like keeping it simple. It's probably more notable for the cast, which stars Virginia Madsen. Sam Trammell from True Blood.
You think he's going to keep his pants on in this movie?
No, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say no. He was at Comic-Con last year at the Wizard World, and I think he was running around naked there, too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so, and he turned into a dog. The director's name is Sarah Siegel Magnus, and she was actually a producer on Precious.
Oh.
We haven't seen the movie, but the IMDb rated a 2.9. That's out of 10.
That's not good.
Not very good.
No, not good. By the way, I'm looking at the headshot of this director. She's hot.
She is.
Have you seen the picture of this woman?
Yes.
My God.
She's hot. And you notice her credits there. She's credited on her filmography as herself in a TV series called Workout.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I'm just...
A TV series called Workout. Okay.
Yeah, she's a founder, along with her, she is married, a managing partner of Smokewood Entertainment.
Uh-huh. All right.
And I guess, so she gives, carte blanche to direct her own movies that get 2.9 ratings at IMDb.
Okay. All right. Well, that's called Crazy Kind of Love.
Yes.
All right. Crazy Kind of Love, doesn't it? What's going on with Virginia Madsen? What the hell?
I don't know. I she doesn't get the Oscar in 2004, and then it just hasn't. You know, she had that TV series a couple years ago that lasted about 4 episodes.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's crazy.
Someone
kind
hire
of...
Virginia Madsen.
So, yeah. Someone hire her, please, and not for movies like this.
No.
Because I mean, you go back and watch that performance in Sideways. Man, she's so good in that movie.
I was just watching the monologue the other day on cable.
Oh.
Amazing.
Please. all right. Hammer of the Gods. Now, here's the deal.
Yeah.
You can't name a movie Hammer of the Gods and not have it about Zeppelin. That's
okay.
It. You just, there's something wrong there.
Well, the funny thing is I was going to say, do not confuse it with the 2009 film that premiered on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Also called Hammer of the Gods?
Hammer of the Gods, yes. And that one had werewolves in it.
Oh, okay. You know, yeah. I was flipping around the other night. Those sci-fi movies are just the most ridiculous. You know, Roger Corman produces those.
Yeah, a number of them.
I wasn't aware that Roger Corman was producing those straight to sci-fi. I was watching the other night. I watched like about 15 minutes of it. I couldn't take it anymore. I had to turn it off. Sharktopus.
Oh yeah, was that Eric Roberts? Right,
With Eric Roberts.
Yeah.
Eric Roberts. I'm telling you, I'm shocked that there really wasn't a physical phone in his hand during that performance. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The only thing that was missing was the phone that he was using it to phone. I mean, it was, and Sharktopus.
Yeah.
Isn't Eric Roberts in all of those movies?
No.
Doesn't he show up in, I mean, that's pretty much his gig now.
Yeah, he does a lot of the straight to DVD stuff. You would think, like, being in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
You know, would kind of like kickstart his career back again, you know?
He's not necessarily in the monster movies, Colin. He's in a lot of straight-to-video stuff, but he's usually in like the crime-type movies.
Yeah.
You know,
he's
like a crime boss that puts like 6 people together to rob a bank. And then he's a guy, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
all right, well,
yeah.
I'm looking at this Hammer of the Gods thing. Evidently, it's an action epic.
You're intrigued, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this one's got a 5.9 rating, so we're going up.
Okay.
And this one has a much better description than Crazy Kind of Love.
All right.
It is the first two words is action epic.
Yeah.
And action epic sees a passionate young man transform into a brutal warrior as he travels the unforgiving landscape in search of his long-lost brother, wait for it,
yeah,
Hakan the Ferocious, whose people are relying on him to restore order to their kingdom.
Hakan the Ferocious.
Hakan the Ferocious.
That should have been the title.
Yes.
Not Hammer of the Gods. You're going to confuse people.
I mean, it's an R rating.
Yeah.
So, you know, I suspect you'll be, you know, up at 4 watching
maybe.
It.
Maybe. Yeah, it's British.
Yeah, oh, okay.
It's British because I was looking at the director's name and he directed a whole bunch of, like, Luthers and Doctor Who's and all that stuff. So, all right, Hammer of the Gods. Not to be confused, it's not the film version of the fantastic biography of Led Zeppelin, which is one of the great... Colin, have you read Hammer of the Gods?
Yes, it's fantastic.
It is outstanding. In every level possible. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't be R-rated. It would be NC-17 if it were actually a documentary version of that. So, all right.
You got to read that and then the Keith Richards biography right after that.
That book, Life?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my coffee table.
Yeah.
It's outstanding. Okay, now we go move on to a movie called I Do.
I Do.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would imagine this involves a wedding of some kind.
You would think,
yeah.
And yeah, I'm looking at the description, and it does indeed involve a wedding. Not the traditional one, though. It involves a gay Brit living in New York, is deprived of his immigration status, and risks losing his family and life in the U.S., so he marries his lesbian best friend to remain in the country and stay with his family.
There you go.
But things get complicated when he meets the love of his life and is forced to make an impossible choice.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would Gerard Depardieu and Andy McDowell in this at all? Or
No, they're not.
Okay.
Are you on the IMDb page?
I am.
By any chance?
Yeah.
Could you name the director for me?
No.
Colin, would you like to name the director for us?
Glenn Gaylord, Glenn Ross.
There you go.
I'm sorry. Glenn Gaylord, David Ross is the writer.
David Ross is the writer. Glenn Gaylord. Yeah.
Glenn Gaylord, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the stars, I mean, Jamie Lynn Sigler from The Sopranos, Alicia Witt, and
there's
David
another,
Ross.
There's another actress, Alicia Witt. What the hell happened to her?
Who cares?
I don't know. I liked her.
I think she's horrible.
I liked her at a time. I think she's cute.
She's kind of cute, but she's one of the worst actresses I've ever seen in my life.
All right, let's move
on.
I Do. It's also, by the way, playing at the Siskel Center.
Yes, it is.
So you can see it either on demand or you can see it at the Siskel Center. Why don't we take a quick break here? We'll come back and finish up the on-demand movies and then talk about the big releases for the week on WGN. It's Eric Childress, Colin Suter. The Midnight Movie Reviews shall continue. 312-981-7200. That's the phone number if you would like to join us. Nick DiGiulio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight Movie Reviews, Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com join us, and we are going through the on-demand stuff. Hello, guys.
Hello.
All right. By the way, I wasn't aware until last week that The Killing is coming back.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Do you know who's in it?
I do now.
Oh, okay.
Good boy.
Yeah, I thought after the second season, and I watched the second season of The Killing. I'm one of the few people that stayed with it because it they pissed everybody off by not solving the Rosie Larson storyline in the first season.
Yep.
But I watched it. I still think it's great. I love it. But I thought it's never coming back. But it is, and my boy Sarsgaard is the star.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That alone almost makes me want to go back to the show.
Yeah.
But I won't do it on principle.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I know they lost a lot of people, but man, you put Sarsgaard in there. And I like what's-her-face, Mrs. Cameron from Ferris Bueller. What the hell's her name?
Frowny McChewgum.
Yeah, I love her. I love her. Okay. I think she's great. So I'm looking forward to it. I think, Sarsgaard as a crazy serial killer? Yeah, I'm in. Are you kidding me?
Well, they already say he's the serial killer?
No, he's in jail.
Oh, he's in jail.
Yeah,
okay.
He's like a lot of his stuff takes place. A lot of his scenes take place in solitary confinement.
Okay.
And it's just like him in a cell.
Oh, okay.
And I'm all over that.
Because I knew the entire season is about a serial killer.
Yeah, he's in jail, okay. And I think they're gonna my guess is that they're gonna pull like a Thomas Harris deal.
Right.
Where she's gonna go to him for help or something like that. So
Which, speak of the devil, Hannibal renewed.
Yeah, baby!
13th episode.
I can't wait. I love it. Colin, have you seen Hannibal yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. It rules. I'm going to watch. I didn't see last night's episode. I'm going to watch it tonight.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to watch it. I always save it for Friday night after work. It's kind of my little treat. So can't wait to see it. I'm going to watch it when I get home. All right, let's talk about The Secret Disco Revolution.
Yes. This one actually is based on the Led Zeppelin bio, Hammer of the Gods. I'm very, very much to the point. It is a documentary on the disco era with interviews with a lot of the people that were responsible. Gloria Gaynor, Thelma Houston, amongst others. According to the storyline, it's a cheeky, sexy documentary hybrid. Uh-huh. Secret Disco Revolution wraps revealing celebrity interviews, classic kitsch footage, and music in a hilarious new package that never lets you stop dancing long enough to decide what's real and what's satire.
What?
I guess it's the stories we tell of the disco documentary scene.
I see. I don't see Steve Dahl's name on the credit list. I mean, if you're going to talk about disco, you got to talk about what happened at Comiskey.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, The Secret Disco Revolution, available on demand. And then our last one is called Shadow Dancer. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and this one I haven't seen, but I've actually heard very good things about. It's a movie set in Belfast in the 1990s, where an active member of the IRA becomes an informant for MI5 in order to protect her son's welfare.
Mm.
And it stars Clive Owen and Andrea Riseborough. And was directed by James Marsh, who is more well-known for doing documentaries like Man on Wire and Project NIMH.
Right.
So I've heard some very positive things about this. It premiered at Sundance a couple of years ago. I didn't see it then. I didn't hear much about it, much buzz at the time. But apparently people have discovered it, and apparently it's pretty good.
Okay, so
that might be the one to look for.
Shadow Dancer. I've always been a Clive Owen fan, man.
Sure.
I think he's awesome. And obviously it's a pretty intriguing, intriguing plot line there.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Okay, so that's Shadow Dancer. If you're interested in that, check it out. So Crazy Kind of Love, Hammer of the Gods, which has nothing to do with Zeppelin. I Do, The Secret Disco Revolution, and Shadow Dancer. Those are your new on-demand choices. All right, let's get to now. Colin, have you seen American Mary?
No, I haven't.
Okay, Eric, you have.
Yeah,
as I have. Why don't you give us the description of American Mary?
Yeah, this is premiered on demand last week. We talked about it a little bit, and it's showing at Facets this week. So we wanted to bring it up again. It's this film directed by Sylvia and Jen Koska, twin sisters, whose previous film was called Dead Hooker in a Trunk.
That's right.
This new one stars Catherine Isabel as a medical student who doesn't have the funds to continue going, so... she ends up at a strip club one night, and is owned by the mobster who occasionally needs some medical work done for his troops. So he hires her to save the life of one of his men. She gets a pretty good paycheck for it, and word of her services get around to the sort of the underground plastic surgery community, people who do some very weird things to themselves, and she becomes their sort of private surgeon. And it's just this weird little sort of horror film character study about this girl. And I kind of compared it in some ways to May, in a way. Obviously not quite as, you know, not really nearly as good as that.
No, it's not nearly as good as May, but...
No, but on its own, as you know, if you're looking for a horror film that, has a lot of weird, things in it, this is a film that you might want to check out.
Yeah. I watched it, I watched it, and I watched it when I got, because I was filling in for Bill Leff, a few days last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I got home at 6 o'clock, it's like 6:30 in the morning when I got home from work, and I watched it then.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. It's a twisted movie. Very twisted, but this is a real subculture. These people who alter their bodies. It's a real mm-hmm. subculture. They put horns under their skin and they file down their teeth and they do all kinds of crazy stuff with their, they hook themselves up and stretch their skins out and stuff like that.
Yep.
The thing about this is there is what I found fascinating about this movie was that the actual surgeons, the people who are supposed to, the surgeons who are supposed to be helping people, they're the bad guys in the movie.
Right.
So, all right, hang on. We'll finish talking about American Mary, which you can see at Facets, or you can order it on demand. News is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Tribune Tower, celebrating our 15th anniversary. This is May 31st, when we started the show at 10 o'clock, marked the 15th anniversary of the Nick DiGilio show here on WGN, and this week marks my 28th year as part of WGN, starting reviewing movies on Roy Leonard's show. And Roy was kind enough to call at the top of the show. And it was great to hear from Roy, and he's doing well. So Midnight Movie Reviews are continuing here. This is Colin and Eric on the radio here from eFilmCritic.com. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, so we were talking about American Mary, which is available on demand and is now playing at Facets, a bizarre, twisted movie with Catherine Isabel, who's really quite striking. She's,
yep.
She really is adorable. She was she was great in Ginger Snaps, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's this very, very twisted movie about this surgeon, medical student. She's studying surgery, who gets caught up in the underground world of body altering, and does some very, very strange things with some very, very strange people. I don't know where they found some of these people.
I know.
In the movie. The girl, I love the girl who played the Betty Boop.
Yes.
She was so creepy and funny, yep. And just, I loved her. I mean, one of my favorite scenes is when she just shows up outside of the hospital at work.
Yes.
And she's standing by the car. And just, I don't know, the Betty Boop girl just cracked me up. And there's all kinds of crazy people. They're splitting their tongues. They're sticking stuff in their heads. They're lacing their backs up. And it just, but it gets really twisted and really dark. And it's, if you know, like you're a horror film fan, there's some big payoff in this movie. And I enjoyed it. I absolutely enjoyed it. It's rated R. It's very violent. It's very strange. It's very twisted. There's something happens to her character pretty early in the film that basically alters her, like changes her. And what she does as revenge on what happens to her is pretty twisted, man.
Yeah. Fantastic, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So I like this movie quite a bit. I thought it was really cool, and I'm looking forward to seeing what these twin sisters are going to do next. And I think they've got a very, very twisted sensibility, clearly. And there's just something appropriate about the fact that they are weird twin sisters who directed this movie, considering the content. I don't know.
They're in the movie too.
Yeah. So I don't know. I like that the Soska sisters are responsible for American Mary. It's playing at the at Facets on Fullerton Avenue in Chicago. If you want to check it out, it's also available on demand for horror film fans only. If you like twisted little movies, this one's strong. I think it's pretty strong. So American Mary, I'm giving it a yes. And I know you liked it too, right, Eric?
Oh yeah.
All right, there you go. There you go. Okay, Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the little magician movie called Now You See Me?
Okay. Yeah, this is a story of four little magicians, who call themselves the Four Horsemen, or really three horsemen, one horsewoman. They're played by Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Isla Fisher, and Dave Franco. Brother of James Franco. And they're big-time magicians and illusionists. And, at the start of the film, they don't know each other. But they're all brought together to a secret location and then cut to a year later. And now they're working together as, magicians and illusionists who do these big shows involving robbing banks. And not actually going into banks and robbing them, but having a volunteer come on stage and doing a big trick where they go into the bank. Anyway, this catches the attention, obviously, of the FBI, particularly an agent played by Mark Ruffalo. And someone from Interpol is brought in, played by Melanie Lorenz, best known as Shoshana from Inglourious Basterds. And they basically chase the magicians all over, Vegas and New York because, they disappear after their act. And they're all, trying to guess their next move. Morgan Freeman is also following them and always seems to be there during the crucial moments to tell Mark Ruffalo when he's on the right track and when he's not on the right track when following these guys. Everybody has to try and stay one step ahead of everybody else. Michael Caine is in there as, someone who works with the Four Horsemen, but who, kind of has a vendetta of his own. But the movie is basically a chase film, and there's twist after twist after twist, as one would expect from a movie like this. In fact, the poster for this movie is very reminiscent of the posters for Ocean's 11 and 12 and 13, and that's kind of what this movie seems to want to be. But it also wants to have a kind of weird supernatural element to it, too, which doesn't quite work. In fact, there's not a whole lot in this movie that does work, and it's a shame because it starts out with such a great concept. I was very much looking forward to seeing a movie about bank-robbing magicians. It sounded like just a fun little premise, especially one with this cast. It's always good to see you know, Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg reuniting after Zombieland. Mm-hmm. They're so good together in that. But there aren't any real characters here, and there's no real sense of purpose that exists pretty much for the twists and not much else. I'm saying it has to be intellectually stimulating, but there's not even really fun banter between the characters here. When there is, it's really forced and not very well directed. And the director, Louis Leterrier, you know, not the greatest resume in the world, Clash of the Titans, The Hulk, the bad Hulk movie, not the good Ang Lee movie.
Thank you.
He seems more interested in having every shot be from a moving crane than he is in, you know, really telling a good story that makes a lick of sense, which this one really doesn't. So overall, very disappointing for me. I was looking forward to this one, and now there's nothing to look forward to here. Not very good. Not recommending it.
Okay. All right. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, this is going to be on that the list of the year of the films that really sort of insult the viewer's intelligence. I mean, you really have to, you'd have to be an idiot going in, and you're an even bigger idiot coming out. Because this movie, like Colin said, I mean, as far as like the characters are concerned, I mean, this movie is really Mark Ruffalo's film. I mean, the movie is sort of sold as an ensemble. It actually has a gigantic cast to it. But most of the action, once the premise is established, is sort of centered around Mark Ruffalo's agent trying to track these people down, and basically him just looking completely annoyed for the entire movie. I mean, that's it. That's all Ruffalo. That's his entire performance is him just being annoyed. And so you don't even really get a good sense of, you know, the magicians. You don't really get to have a whole lot of fun with them other than, you know, watching their stage show, which is not very good. And you know, one of the things we've talked about is the idea that when you're doing magic tricks on film, it doesn't quite work, with the exception of maybe, you know, a couple movies. But you know that you're being tricked. Okay, it's not that, like, you don't sit there going, how do they do that? Because you just assume that everything is done with special effects and that Woody Harrelson is not really, you know, doing the tricks, or Jesse Eisenberg. And there are moments during their stage show where it's clearly CGI. And you're just going, that's not even real. That couldn't even happen in real life. So why are you trying to fool that with us? And it all sort of leads up to these head-smacking twists at the end of the film, that, you know, the movie sort of plays out in a way like a Usual Suspects kind of thing. There's this, like, 12-minute prologue at the beginning as the magicians are all banded together by this mysterious hooded figure, which I think is a major, a key mistake in the screenplay and the direction of this movie, to establish these guys this way instead of, you know, having a sort of this aura of mystery to who these people really are and what their true purpose is, when in the first 12 minutes of the movie, it's pretty much established, what's going on in a way. And, you know, just by the end, I couldn't believe just how stupid this movie was. And I can't recommend it at all.
Yeah, this movie is so stupid, it makes Fast and the Furious 6 look like Tree of Life. That's how stupid this movie is.
That's stupid.
And I loved Fast and Furious 6, so let me just tell you that. By the way, I can't believe the amount of money that movie made. I almost fell off my chair when I saw the box office returns on that. And the utter disappointment of The Hangover Part 3.
Well, it was, you know, as much as I'm not a fan of the Fast and the Furious movies, it warms my heart because Todd Phillips was so sure that he was going to beat Fast and the Furious this weekend.
Yeah, and it made less than double what Fast and the Furious
yep.
made. God bless America. All right, so
maybe we'll have that again this weekend.
Yeah.
I think it's happening, Colin.
With another director.
Yeah.
I think it's happening.
Yeah.
This is one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen. I mean, truly stupid. And there are so many cheats in this movie, like you said. It's almost impossible to make a movie featuring magic tricks or illusions, like you said, Eric, and none of them are sincere. None of the tricks are really happening. You know, I mean, it's all CGI. It's all special effects. Woody Harrelson doesn't know how to do a trick. You know, I mean, it's, so it's just, it's and the plot is so completely ludicrous. And the where it goes is it just kept getting dumber and dumber and dumber as it went along. Monumental waste of talent in this movie. I mean, like some incredibly talented actors and actresses in this thing for naught, for nothing. This guy, this director, what the hell's his name?
Louis Leterrier.
Yeah, no. Stop.
Yeah, terrible.
Oh, my God. No, so this is just stupid. And I like almost every single person involved in this movie. You know, they're all good. And it was Michael Caine in The Prestige?
Yes, he was.
Okay. I figured he was because it's a... I figured he was in it because it's a Christopher Nolan movie, and I don't think he could make a movie without Michael Caine.
Nine more.
So I just kept thinking about, you know, because I didn't like that movie, but it's 8,000 times better than this one. Now, this was the Morgan Freeman fell asleep when talking about this movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that says a lot. Now, you're being interviewed about the movie and you fall asleep during it. That pretty much. I think that
this is a guy that's talking about wormholes and stuff on the Science Channel or whatever. So come on.
Yeah. So that's it. That's all you need to know. Morgan Freeman fell asleep trying to promote this movie. There you go. That's it. No, this is one of the dumbest movies of the year. And I wasn't like you, Colin. I was intrigued by the premise. I thought, wow, that could be fun. It could be goofy summertime fun.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely stupid. So, all right, you guys, hang on. it just keeps getting better. We've got another treat to talk about. It's called After Earth. We'll get to that one in a second. It's the new movie with Will Smith, his idiot son, and it's directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Ding dong. So that's what's coming up next right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Coming up after 1 o'clock, we'll finish reviewing the movies, and we've got Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, and much more. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You got a movie question or a comment or a review yourself? You can join us. Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com always join me for the midnight movie reviews. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. And let's welcome Colin and Eric back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah.
why don't you tell us about After Earth?
After Earth.
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is, as you did mention, this is the latest film from M. Night Shyamalan. Not that anyone would know that, because the studio has pretty much made it a secret. That is the twist of this movie, that no one knows that he made the movie.
Yeah.
But this is actually a project conceived by Will Smith for his son, Jaden. It's 1,000 years into the future. Earth has become an uninhabitable wasteland, like we sort of expect it to be. Humans have moved throughout the universe to another planet, taken up residence. Along the way, they have encountered some aliens, some blind aliens, obviously offspring from the Tremors monsters.
No, don't mention that movie in this.
I'm sorry, I meant Starship Troopers. I'm just trying to give people suggestions here,
okay,
Nick.
All right.
Better suggestions, you know, because this is not going to end well. Review is not going to end well.
Yeah.
Just a spoiler alert twist. But the only way to battle the aliens, even though they're blind, they have the ability to smell your fear. So you have to master the art of ghosting, which is just basically not being afraid. And if you cannot be afraid, you can just sort of stand wherever you want, and even the alien, three times your size, he's not going to find you, and you can kill it. So... The master of ghosting is Cypher Rage, played by Will Smith. His son, Katai, played by Jaden Smith, has joined up for the Academy to fight the aliens or to save mankind or whatever. And he, you know, he can run a really good mile, but he apparently freezes up when it hits the fan, basically. So he's not allowed into the Academy. And he's already got problems with his dad. They don't really have a good relationship. So dad decides he's going to take little Katai on his next mission with him, because that's, you know, apparently the army in the future has a take your son to work day. So they go on a mission, and they end up crash landing on Earth, and they are the only two survivors. Cypher is stuck in the ship with two broken legs. Okay, so he has to send Katai out on a mission to retrieve the other half of the ship, where there's a beacon that can be shot out into space and they can be rescued. So little Katai has to go, you know, throughout the rainforests of Earth and encounter monkeys and baboons and eagles and whatnot in hopes to save him and his father. Oh, and meanwhile, on the ship that they were with is one of these aliens they're bringing along for training purposes, apparently. So the alien might be at the other end of the spectrum by the beacon waiting for little Katai to show up. That's the plot.
Yeah.
Could have described that in probably about 10 words, but there's such needless complications that amount to absolutely zero suspense, zero classic adventure, zero science, even though it's science fiction. There's so many things wrong with this movie.
Okay. All right, hang on. We got to go to the news. Then we can list all the things that are wrong with this movie.
Please.
If I'm on till 6 a.m. So hang on, Eric and Colin. After Earth, Will Smith, Jaden Smith, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. If you saw it and you want to comment on it, 312-981-7200. We do have a real movie to actually talk about, which we will do after we finish reviewing After Earth. And that's Richard Linklater's Before Midnight, which is an actual film. So that's like, you know, so we do have an actual film to talk about this week. So, all right, news is coming up next on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, covering all the movies for you, on-demand options that you can watch in your own comfort of your own home, and movies that are out in theaters right now. If you have a question or a comment, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com join me every Friday night. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric, you just described the plot for After Earth, the new Will Smith movie with Jaden Smith, his son, directed and co-written by M. Night Shyamalan. So based on a story, by the way, by Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So why don't you continue with your review of After Earth?
Oh, well, that break was good. I calmed down a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just forget for a moment that this was a project conceived by Will Smith for his son. Because I don't care if this is a project conceived by God himself or Jesus Christ, this thing would still suck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This could have been a very simple story. It could have been a very simple adventure story, crash landing, boy trying to save his dad and whatnot. And the thing that's missing from this film, amongst other things, are two likable characters. You know, it would help if we want these two people to be rescued. But the film creates this contentious relationship from between them from the get-go, and there's no time for them together to, you know, really sort of form any, you know, relatable bond that suggests that either of them are even worth saving. Then you have Jaden Smith, who I think that for this film to maybe have worked, You may want to have cast maybe a much younger actor. You know, if, even if the film wasn't a science fiction story, it was just a story of, you know, two people stranded somewhere and, you know, a young boy that you might want to see, you know, save his dad and save himself. So instead you got Jaden Smith, who in just a couple of movies, even going back to The Pursuit of Happiness, where he was an annoying little brat, and then grew up to become the remake of The Karate Kid, where he was even a bigger brat, is one of the most unlikable screen presences for a young person that I think I've ever seen, ever. It doesn't help that he's, for some reason, everyone in this movie speaks with some weird dialect, some weird accent. Everyone is, like, trying to out-accent the other person, and it doesn't really help in Jaden Smith's case because he's also narrating the film. And there are literally moments in this movie where he's completely unintelligible, and I had no idea what his line reading was. And then you get to, you know, the special effects of the movie, the CGI, you know, the monkeys and eagles and tigers, all horribly rendered. The idea that Will Smith ciphers tells Katai that for 1,000 years, you know, these creatures on Earth have evolved to a point where they will kill humans. Well, why? If they haven't been on the planet for 1,000 years, why would they evolve to kill something that doesn't exist?
Right.
This is one of the many of the scientific issues that you can take with this film, which has no interest in the sort of the ecological evolution of a dying planet. You know, we don't really get a sense of what this future life is like. We don't know how an alien is able to get into the living room of of these people. That's one of probably the biggest unsolved mystery in this entire film, which is littered with flashbacks. So we don't even really get any sort of sense of any true danger happening to the young boy traveling along this treacherous landscape, mostly because he's a little brat and a wimp, and just, I don't know. There are so many things wrong with this movie that I don't want to take spoil them all. I wanted to let you guys have a little take a little lick at this thing. So, who's up next?
Colin.
I always enjoy the backwards logic of a M. Night Shyamalan movie when it comes to science and science fiction. I believe the air on planet Earth is supposed to be uninhabitable now, and so little Jaden Smith has to take these little air oxygen pills or something that he has to suck in so he can breathe the air for a while, even though there are trees growing giving off oxygen and plenty of oceans and rivers still giving off oxygen, and these animals have been living on this planet for the last thousands of years breathing the oxygen. This is also the same backwards logic that killed the aliens in Signs, who apparently could be killed just by getting them wet.
Yeah.
That's
one of the things about
this.
Yeah, one of the things about Signs that always cracks me up, and it's loaded in this movie too, is if they're supposed to be these intelligent creatures from another world, from another planet, from the galaxy, why do they choose a planet that has mostly made up of stuff that could kill it?
Right, exactly.
I mean, what the hell are we talking about? And then, like, the water, and then, like, he has to have a flashback to his wife's death so he can learn how to swing a baseball bat?
Yep, right.
Oh, my God.
The same applies here.
Absolutely.
And all the dialogue in this movie is, you know, expository and pretty stupid and laughable, of course, especially the ghosting thing. If you're a Will Smith fan, great. You get to watch him fall asleep during this film. Pretty much that's the character arc here. And it's the only credible performance in the entire thing. And if you take a look at the poster of these two, Jaden and Will Smith, just giving you that dumb deer in the headlights look, that's pretty much what you're going to be watching the film if you decide to do so. I can imagine what it must be like, you know, being on the set of this thing. You got M. Night Shyamalan, who thinks he's, you know, God's gift to suspense, you know, the greatest thing to happen to that since Hitchcock. And then you got Jaden Smith, who thinks that, you know, who probably believes that this is the movie that is forever going to put his name above the title for every blockbuster that he's in.
that's a lot of petulance to deal with on one set of the film. This is a vanity project and nothing more, nothing less. I hope it bombs, and it's a terrible film. So, Nick?
No surprise here. It's one of the worst movies of the year. I have not liked one M. Night Shyamalan movie. I think they all suck.
I'm with you.
Every one of them. Anybody who's, Sixth Sense is great. No, it's not. It's not. Unbreakable, stupid. And Signs. Those are the ones that people somehow defend. And all three of those movies suck. And everything he's done after, people started to realize what a hack this guy was, starting with The Village. You know, and then, you know, what are we talking about? The Happening? What the hell?
Lady in the Water.
Lady in the Water. This is a horrible movie. It's horrible in a different way than his other movies are. This is obviously this is a vanity project. There's no question about it. And Will Smith is bound and determined to shove his son down our throats. And this kid, and you're right, Eric. This kid is one of the most, I thought I hated him in the Karate Kid movie.
Yeah.
He is unbearable, this kid. He is unbearable. One of the most unlikable screen presence, like you said, ever. And a massive chunk of this movie is all this kid. Like, you know what I mean? Will Smith is the supporting character in this movie.
Yeah.
The Jaden kid he's in every scene, and it is unbelievable. And I got to tell you, this is a big budget movie. This is a Will Smith, movie. This is like one of the biggest movie stars in the world right now or ever. And some of the worst special effects I've ever seen. I mean, what how much money what's the budget on this thing?
$130 million.
I mean, you can't do better than that. I mean, some of the worst effects, some of the most laughable effects I've ever seen. And when it's not being overly serious, and again, pompous, and with all of these statements about about Earth and they're scientifically wrong, and all this crap about fear is a choice, and all that, it is also, like really pious and serious at the same time. It's hilariously bad. And I you mentioned the performances, they're all bad. I mean, this kid is unbelievable. This is really one of the worst movies of the year, without question, one of the worst movies of the year. And I know that, that there have been supporters of M. Night Shyamalan in the early days. I don't quite understand it. I think this guy right out of the gate has made crappy movies, and I don't like any of his films. So, and yet this is another one to add to the pile of crap that M. Night Shyamalan has turned out since 1999.
And that fear is a choice thing, while, I mean, I don't know all the teachings of Scientology. I mean, Will Smith is obviously one of the most well-known, members of the cult, church. First, I think it's interesting now that the sort of the three chief Scientologists in Hollywood have all made their Flee Earth movies. You had Battlefield Earth, mm-hmm. You had Oblivion about a month ago, and now you got this.
Yeah.
The whole fear is a choice thing is something out of the very sort of early teachings of Dianetics, mm-hmm. where the whole idea of shedding your innermost fears, from the human shell that you have, that's not too far removed.
Nope.
No,
you can tell. I mean, you can tell this was conceived by a guy who wants to shove his son down people's throats, and he's got all the money in the world to do it.
Yep,
that's all it is. And it's amazing to me that he hired M. Night Shyamalan for this. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm not shocked by that. But you would think. I don't know. It's horrible on every level. I mean, it's just so bad, brother. I wish this guy would just stop making movies. I swear to God. They're so bad. His movies are so, so, so bad.
How about that Last Airbender?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's like they're...
That's the worst to me. To me, the Airbender
is the worst.
No, I think The Happening is the worst. I mean, it's a question of... I mean, they're all horrible, but yeah. I mean, Last Airbender is just completely incomprehensible. You know what I mean? But the Happening is the one I think I... Well, The Happening, I guess, is entertaining because it's so bad. The Happening is... one of the movies that he's made where you can just laugh out loud at it.
Yeah.
And
Goldberg's talking to plastic plants and everything.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I remember sitting next to you, Eric, during that during that screening, and And the guy throws himself in front of the lawnmower, and I just lean over to you and go, R-rated. Because that was the big hook with the happening. That's M. Night right. Shyamalan is making an R-rated movie.
They actually had that in the ads. Do you remember that?
M. Night Shyamalan's
first R-rated feature.
And the
who cares?
Yeah, exactly. And the logo for the R-rated, the R-restricted, was in red.
Yeah.
And it was look at that. It's rated R. Yeah. Oh, God. All right. Well, this is Grant from Milwaukee on WGN. Hi, Grant.
Hey. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I liked Sixth Sense and I liked Signs, but how is this guy still getting work?
Well, because when a guy with as much power as Will Smith hires you, that's your pass right there. I mean, Will Smith has got more money than God. He's one of the biggest movie stars in the world, and if he wants to make a movie for his son, and he hires the director, that's, you're in luck.
I guess, but like you were saying with the happening? What are the plants attacking us
right.
now?
Right, yeah.
Is that kind of how that worked?
The people had to run from the wind in that
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, well, yeah. Were there spores coming? It made no sense.
It made no sense at all. No, made no sense.
Yeah, and I admit, going to see a few movies I have with the previews and whatnot, and it looked okay, this one coming out. I'm like, it looked interesting, but now I've heard all the reviews, and it's like,
I'm not going. It's as bad as you can get, Grant. It's a terrible movie. So
I didn't even know that Shyamalan had directed it until I was listening to you guys tonight.
Yeah. Well, they've been hiding it.
They didn't promote it for a reason, obviously.
Yeah,
and whatever, that's all I got.
All right, Grant.
How many more movies is this guy going to make?
I have no idea.
Not many after this one.
Yeah, this one could be the stud, the nail in the coffin right there. All right, Grant, thanks for the call.
All right, take it easy.
There you go.
It's got a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Only five movies have a worse rating this year, wide releases.
Yeah, a terrible movie. I mean, so bad. All right, look, let's just reverse this, shall we?
Yep.
Let's go in the complete opposite direction that you could possibly go. Everybody hang on. Richard Linklater's latest film, Before Midnight, which is the final chapter, or maybe the final chapter, in the trilogy featuring Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. We'll tell you all about that movie coming up next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN Midnight Movie Reviews. We get thorough reviews for you, and including all the on-demand stuff. Now, we got a movie to review here that we finally want to review. Colin, tell us about Before Midnight.
All right. Well, like you said, this is the third in the Before trilogy, Before Sunrise in 1996 and Before Sunset in 2004. And this reunites Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy as Jesse and Celine, respectively. And now they are, well, they're not married, but they're together. And they have two young daughters, and they live in Paris. And he also has a son from a previous marriage who we see at the film's opening scene as Ethan Hawke says goodbye to him at the airport in Greece, sending him back to Chicago where he lives with his mom. And this scene at the beginning of the movie triggers something in Ethan Hawke, sort of a longing to be with his son while he still has some of the best years ahead of him. And he talks about this to Celine, and they have, long discussions of the implications of these feelings. And during this time, they're spending their last day on this vacation in Greece. And just like the first two films, everything takes place in one day. And just like the last two films, there are long discussions between these two characters, often in one, single take. And here they are just as fresh and as exciting to listen to as they were the first time. The difference here is that they get to interact with other characters who also have a lot to say and who are just as engaging. But the second half is strictly Jesse and Celine, and if you think they're just going to trail off and have, more deep and meaningful philosophical conversations again, well, they are, but this time there's a real tension and a real anger between them. This was some of the best fighting I've heard from a couple in a movie ever. It's sad, it's funny, it's thrilling to watch and listen to, and actually kind of suspenseful. I wasn't quite sure how this was going to end up. But the way that it does end is perfect, and as is the rest of the film. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Okay, hang on, and we got to go to the news, and then we're going to get Eric's thoughts and my thoughts on Before Midnight, Richard Linklater's latest film. But first, we're going to hit the news, and we'll wrap up the Midnight movie reviews with the rest of the reviews of Before Midnight. If you saw Before Midnight, you want to join us with your thoughts, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200.
Dun, 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 dun. Some that you recognize, some that you want to even.
Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. Midnight movie reviews continue. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me each week for the movie reviews. Colin told us all about Before Midnight, the new Richard Linklater movie with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And he loved it, and he's highly recommending it. And Eric, you reviewed this from Toronto?
Sundance.
Okay.
Sundance this year, yeah.
Okay, Sundance this year. And, obviously we know that you liked it, so let's talk a little bit about why you like Before Midnight.
Yeah, I said it at Sundance, and I stick to it today. I think this is the best movie of the year so far. Everything Colin said is absolutely true. Because, you know, these characters, you know, we've developed a relationship with them over the course of two, you know, pretty remarkable movies. One of the hardest things to watch is characters we like so much, kind of desperately trying to sort of keep it together. We know that there's this growing tension, as Colin suggested, from the very opening scene. And it's not a tension because of hatred or, you know, things they've done to each other, you know, stupid arguments and stuff like that. The arguments that they have in this movie are as intelligent as the philosophical discussions that they have, and they're intelligent because they deal with real life situations. You know, very simplistic things about fatherhood and, you know, job security and, you know, location, and where to live and stuff like that. You know, you don't get conversations like this in the movies almost ever. So when we get to, you know, the point where they're actually sort of reevaluating their relationship, it's just so remarkably refreshing, you know, to hear people ask, you know, sort of kind of the cliched questions, but get like real life answers. You know, by the time we get to the final act of this movie, which mostly takes place in the hotel room, Colin's right. It is absolutely suspenseful, and yet finds way to inject humor into it. And there are moments that you're laughing out loud one moment, and you feel like you got stabbed in the heart in the next. Nick, you mentioned that you know whether or not they might want to revisit these characters maybe for another movie. I hope they don't, because with Before Sunset in 2004. I thought they came up with one of the most perfect endings imaginable, and I think they've done it again. And it's a pretty remarkable feat. I really hope that this screenplay in particular is remembered at the Oscars, as well as both Hawke and Delpy. Delpy is incredible in this movie, absolutely incredible, as is Hawke. I think this is, seriously, one of the best trilogies that cinema has ever given us. You know, it's not something that, you know, has special effects or, you know, big adventure stories. It's the story of two people. And in essence, it's the story of all of us. So, yeah, I cannot recommend this movie highly enough.
Yeah, I'm with you guys, man. This is one of the best movies of the year, without question. And just remarkable dialogue. It's really amazing that these three people, you know, Delpy and Hawke and Linklater, talk about their process. They just went into like a couple of hotel rooms, locked themselves in the room, and just went and improvised and put this script together. And it's kind of one of those deals where you see, you know, this is one of those movies that you see about relationships that you wish the two people in real life were actually together. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wish they were together. I wish Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy were actually a couple, because it feels that genuine. And again, you know, when you see these movies over the, I mean, it's been 18 years, you know, since the first film, which is insane to me that it's been that long. And I too love the whole. I too love all three of the movies. This one I think is the best of the three. And anybody who's ever been, and this is absolutely true. Anybody who's ever been, in a long lasting relationship, is going to recognize so much stuff. A little too much is right. There were times when I was like, oh God, you know, watching the movie, heartbreaking and painful and funny and poignant. And again, you know, just, it's a simple movie. It's just about, you know, they interact with more people, but the second half of the film is just, it's exceedingly intelligent stuff. It has respect for the audience, unlike 90% of the movies that are out right now. You know, this is a movie that respects the audience intelligence, and the payoff is huge. The payoff is huge in every possible emotion. And again, of all of them, of the three films, this is the one that to me seems, because all three of them have wonderful dialogue, and you know, the first two are very sort of whimsical, you know, and romantic, and not in a corny way. You know what I mean? They earn it in those two movies. Yeah. They absolutely earn it.
Or a pretentious way.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's something, this one to me, it works on a whole another level. And there's a level of pain in here and of anger. These are two incredibly three-dimensional characters that you care about. Sometimes it's painful. It's a painful movie to watch. You guys agree with me on that?
Yeah.
Nick, can I ask a question about this?
Yeah.
And I go off your comment that couples who are in long relationships would appreciate this.
I don't know about it. I don't know if appreciate is the right word, but certainly identify with.
All right, identify. Would couples or people who have never been married or couples in short relationships, would they have the same reaction, do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think if you're just a human being, you'll like this movie. Okay. That's just me. You know what I mean? But there are several moments in this movie, stretches, in fact, where if you've been in a relationship with somebody for a long time and there's that pent-up frustration and things don't always go well at all, there are moments in this movie that are incredibly truthful and accurate and painful. You guys agree with that, right?
Yeah, and I think this is a film that, I think even if you haven't seen the other two movies, this is a film that works on its own. Because they make several references to how the relationship came to be.
Right.
So they sort of give you, you know, little inklings of the backstory without, if you haven't seen the first two movies.
Right.
But if you have, you know, even if you're a short-term relationship specialist, you've been in a relationship with these people for 18 years.
Right.
So you feel part of that relationship as is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Eric, that if you haven't seen the first two, you can still see this one as a one-off and it'll work. But I highly, highly recommend that people see the first two.
Clearly.
And the effect that it has when you have seen the first two movies. And in my case, you know, and in our cases, having seen the first one in 15 years, having seen the first one, you know, 19 years ago, and the last one 9 years ago, you know, or whatever it was, 18 years ago and 9 years ago, that's a lot of time, you know, and rewatching these movies over the years, which is what I've done. You know, I've seen the first two movies many, many times, and I plan on seeing this one a few more times as well. Well, absolutely one of the best movies of the year. This is, you know, these are the kind of movies, this is the reason why I go to movies. This is, you know what I mean? You have to sit through stuff like After Earth. You know, and then the payoff is something this beautiful. So
yeah,
absolutely. This is Sherry. She's in Buffalo Grove on WGN. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good.
Well, if I saw the first two movies, and they're two of my favorite movies,
you're gonna love this movie, Sherry. I'm telling you right now.
I'm afraid I'm gonna burst if it's as good as you are saying it, because I can't imagine a movie being better than those two.
Well,
and it's just going to be exciting to see it.
It's Sherry, when are you going to see it?
Well, in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. Call back after you've seen it, because I don't know if you're going to be able to, because you are going to explode.
I will. I'm sure I will. And I'm glad you mentioned that it stands on its own, because nobody I know has seen the first two movies.
Well, yeah, they didn't make a lot of money. It's amazing that they were able to. You know, I read an interview with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy and Linkletter in Entertainment Weekly, and they talked about it. It's like, you know, we're not the big budget. You know, we're not like Iron Man. You know,
right.
You know,
it's
amazing that we were able to get three movies out of this thing because of the, you know, they didn't gross a whole lot, but they don't cost a lot of money, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, I think they wrote some of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Delpy, Ethan Wood. Ethan Hawke and Richard Linkletter, they all wrote the script together.
Well, I'm so glad you reviewed it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
You're going
to
love it, Sherry. It's a great
film.
Thank you. Okay, take care.
Where is it playing?
River East.
Okay.
Evanston and the Century.
Okay.
So that's all it's playing right now. It's only in those theaters. But, you know, I would go for the – I'd get in the car and go. That's all I'm saying. You know, wherever you got to go to see this, go see it. So there you go. All right. A great movie. Two horrible movies and one great movie in the theaters right now. And so what are we looking forward to next week, Eric?
Well, we got a bunch of stuff next week. The two big ones, The Internship opens next week.
Oh, God.
And another Ethan Hawke movie, The Purge, opens next week. Also a Sundance film called The Kings of Summer. And a lot of documentaries, including one on Ricky Jay.
Oh, yeah.
Opens to the Music Box.
Yeah. Really looking forward to that. All right, very, very cool. So, the Internship looks terrible. Oh, God. All right.
All right.
I'm looking forward, for some reason, I'm looking forward to The Purge.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, God.
Oh, I think it looks great. It's nothing but mayhem and murder, so I'm all over it. It's going to
take place 9 years after Before Midnight.
There you go. Nice way to close it out. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, yeah.
All right, take care. There's Eric. There's Colin. EFilmCritic.com is their is the website. You should check them out.